The man who loved Cézanne. To say that Catherine was curious right now would be to understate the case. Curious and excited and nervous and apprehensive and, well, she was such a medley of emotions she could barely concentrate on the road ahead. She brought the car to a halt halfway down on the street so it wasn't visible from the building. Checking her face in the mirror, she dabbed some gloss on the downward curve of her lips. Her eyes, normally a glistening blue, were aquamarine, which meant her heart today was pumping more blood than usual. Quickly, she ran a brush through her short blonde hair, then caught her breath. What was she doing here? Had she completely lost her mind? It had all started 2 weeks ago when the ringing phone roused her from a dead sleep, and with a reluctant air, she listened to an animated voice on the other end. It was Andrea, her gym partner. The words tumbled forth in a torrent of excitement. I know it's really late. I've got to tell you something. It was just so amazing. I can't describe it. I don't know what I'm saying. It was beyond belief. Slow down, Catherine said, still groggy with sleep. What are you talking about? I've just had the most amazing night of my life. Andrea laughed, and the sound of her laughter brought Catherine to a sitting position. Okay, who's the guy, and where did you meet him? Catherine asked. Taking a long breath, Andrea proceeded to give all the details, how she had answered an ad for an office assistant, how she received a phone call the very next day from the employer, how she had her hopes dashed when he told her he'd already found an assistant. He spoke with a clipped accent, and Andrea thought his deep voice sounded like one of those wonderful British actors in those old black and white films, and she wanted to continue the conversation just to hear him talk. And so she drew him out. That was Andrea's gift, drawing people out. In less than 10 minutes, she discovered that they both loved opera, they both loved Mexico, and they both loved Cézanne. So charmed was the man by Andrea that he asked if she would like to meet him for a drink. They agreed to meet that night at a bar. Hearing the story, Catherine could barely contain her shock and rose to her feet. You went for a drink with a man you met over the phone? Andrea laughed again, then resumed her story. Yes, it was a bit crazy, she admitted, but she never did have a drink with the man. What happened was she went to the bar and he wasn't there. She was about to leave when a bartender waved her over. Your name, Andrea? Yes. This is for you. The note pressed into her hand was written with a fountain pen. The note said he had been called away unexpectedly, but wanted to meet her later. He gave the address of his apartment building in the Mid-Wilshire district, and beneath it scrawled the sentence, "Silence is the rule and must be observed at all times." The note was signed, "From the man who loves Cézanne." Don't tell me you went to his apartment, Catherine cried over the phone. A gutsy laugh preceded Andrea's response. Why, of course I went. It was all so mysterious. I had to find out what it was all about. Catherine was at the fridge now and eating the brownie left over from a night ago. Instead of chewing on it, she let it dissolve in her mouth so she could hear every word that shot across the wire. So I drove to his apartment and parked halfway down the street. I didn't want him to know what kind of car I was driving in case he was a lunatic. I did a quick check in the mirror, then got out of the car. I thought he might be observing me from the window, so I was conscious of how I walked. I didn't do my normal slow shuffle with my eyes roving all over the place. I walked like a confident woman with my shoulders thrown back and my eyes straight ahead. The building was gorgeous, all gleaming Art Deco exterior. It was like a building from an architect's dream. Wait, I know that building, Catherine exclaimed. I've passed it 100 times. Well, that's where I was, said Andrea. So I pushed the white button for apartment 399. And I was about to speak my name into the intercom, but then I remembered the rule of silence, so I didn't say a word. And a moment later, the front door buzzed open. My heart was jumping in my chest as I walked down the long wooden floor of the hallway. I paused before the double doors of his apartment. The doors were dark and made of some heavy wood. I knocked. There was no answer. And then suddenly I noticed that one of the doors was unlocked. It pushed open at my fingertips. I stepped into a dimly lit hallway and glanced up. A long staircase flowed toward me, and pouring down the wooden stairs like a fountain of red wine was a dark red carpet. I heard a shuffling of feet and lifted my eyes to the top of the staircase. There stood a man with dark wavy hair. He has his legs apart with his hands thrust in the pockets of his pants. His chin was tilted up, which gave the impression of a supreme confidence, a confidence bordering on arrogance. But for some reason, it didn't put me off. In fact, if anything, it just made him seem even more compelling. A moment after our eyes met, he raised a finger to his lips. I didn't know whether to laugh or run away. Catherine swung the receiver down while she took a sip from the glass of milk, bringing the receiver back. "So what did you do?" she asked in a voice tense with excitement. There was no more laughter from Andrea. Instead, she spoke with a measured tone that was almost trance-like. "Well," he gestured for me to come upstairs, and so I climbed the long staircase and entered into a large living room. The apartment had those high ceilings that make you feel like you've stepped back into another era. The furnishings were all antiques, with red velvet drapes drawn across the windows and brass fittings for an enormous fireplace. "So what did you do?" Catherine cried. "Do? I did nothing," Andrea said, and then added in a breathless voice, "He did everything." "What do you mean?" Catherine asked. "Well," began Andrea slowly, "he gestured to this ornate couch and I sat down. And then he lowered his body next to mine. With his head, he indicated a painting that hung over the fireplace. It was a Cézanne. Or maybe it was a copy, I couldn't tell. But it was a still life of fruit in a bowl, with the lip of the bowl curving really low, as though the bowl itself was drunk and the fruit ready to spill out. I opened my mouth and was about to say something when he held his index finger to my lips. That was the first time he touched me."
"He touched you?"
Catherine asked, pacing the kitchen floor with the phone. "How else did he touch you?" "Well, he reached over to a bowl of fruit on the center of the table and took a peach and brought it up to my face and, well, he just held it just under my nose. I have to tell you, it was the most delicious and delicate smell. It was so fresh, so tantalizing. Catherine, do you remember what a fresh peach smells like? The perfume?" Without waiting for an answer, Andrea continued. "Then he rolled it along the side of my face, to the back of my neck, and then holding firmly to the peach, brushed the soft skin lightly against the nape of my neck. Back and forth, ever so lightly. I thought I was going to die. Oh, you just gave me the sweetest shiver," Catherine said in a hushed voice. "Wait, there's more." A moment later, he brought the peach to my bottom lip and made a gesture of biting with his teeth. So I opened my mouth to bite the peach, but he teasingly pulled it away. Then suddenly he brought the peach to his mouth and bit into the flesh. Taking the dripping piece between his thumb and forefinger, he brought it to my face, then slowly rubbed it over my lips. The taste and tang of the juicy drops on my lips. I had to move my tongue over my lips to catch the nectar. And then he worked the piece in and out of my mouth. And I could feel the flesh crush against my teeth and spurts of juice trickling down my throat. "And that's when it happened," Andrea said.
"What happened?"
Catherine's voice was keyed to a high pitch of excitement. "He took another bite of the peach and turned his face toward mine. And with the piece protruding from his teeth, he stroked my lips with the dripping juice, and I licked the juice and drank it down. Then with his teeth, he pushed the piece into my mouth, and our lips met, and we were kissing with the juice of the peach running down my chin and my neck. Oh my God," Catherine whispered over the phone. "Oh my God." That was all the story Catherine was allowed to hear that night. If anything else happened to Andrea in the apartment that night, Andrea never mentioned it. But after that conversation, Catherine couldn't think about anything else. Over and over, she replayed the story in her mind until she felt as if she herself had drunk down the thick, sweet juice of the peach. And now, 2 weeks later, here she was standing at the entrance of the man's apartment. She didn't even know his name. What was she thinking? She had made her way to the apartment without an invitation, without telling Andrea, without communicating with the man in any way. She had come because she couldn't stand it any longer,
And here she was trying to summon her courage to press the button to apartment 399. She raised a trembling hand, but at the last moment her courage failed her. She couldn't do it. She turned her body around to the street. She had taken one step on the pathway when suddenly a sweet light scent smarted in her nose. "I have just brought a basket of fresh peaches from the countryside," came a deep voice with a clipped British accent. Catherine whirled around. Standing in the doorway of the building was a man with wavy hair and flashing dark eyes. In his hand was a basket of ripe peaches. "I wonder if you would care to sample one," he said. Catherine took a deep breath. "Oh, yes," she said. "Yes, I would."